So Walter stood at 5 foot five, sported a wispy moustache and parted his brown hair right to left. He was also shy and soft-spoken, yet when he stood behind the turntables, he became hurricane articulate, as though he kept his daytime thoughts to himself because he could express them so much more forcefully at night. Aware that the process of splitting the nucleus of a song into smaller nuclei could produce a significant release of energy, Walter approached his work in the DJ booth with the mindset of a nuclear physicist, and once he deducted that drums lay at the atomic heart of dance music, he began to hunt down songs that included a long drum break intro, or alternatively a break, the technique transplanted from jazz and gospel into soul, funk and early disco, whereby the vocalists and musicians would stop playing, often simultaneously, in order to let the drummer play solo. Purchasing two copies of any record that contained one or more of these percussive gems, Walter specialised in stretching them beyond the horizon of New York's tribal imaginary by mixing between two copies of a record. Born in Brooklyn on the 2nd of April 1954, Walter started to forge his sensibility at a young age at the Walt Whitman Junior High in Brooklyn. Recalls one friend, he was the lone white boy hanging out with the sisters. That's S-I-S-T-A-H-S, the sisters, a fairly tough group of black girls who probably, and I'm continuing the quote, helped cultivate his musical taste. And by June 1972, when he met Rich Flores at a gay pride event, he had accumulated a collection of 1,500 7-inch singles. I should say that the research for this article was partly archival, but also included an interview with Rich Flores, who I've just referenced. Soon after, Rich Flores visited Walter, who was still living with his mother, and witnessed him play records on an amp and two Garrard turntables. Rich Flores told me he had one turntable plugged into the left channel and the other turntable plugged into the right channel, and he also used low spindles and paper sleeves to help the record slip. He had two copies of Bobby Bird's Hot Pants, and he extended the opening of the record by using headphones in the fader, which he also used to hear how to cue the incoming record. He could keep it going for as long as he wanted. It was easy for him. All right, so this is a great opportunity for us to hear at least the opening of the Walter was turning to with such ease of Bobby Bird's Hot Pants.
I'm coming, baby, I'm coming. Coming, come, come, help me. Make your baby understand. Don't try love unless you take command. Love can be a two-sided thing. You love it getting more than you can rain. Hey, I'm coming.
Walter had already DJed for a month or two at a club called Sanctorium, where an African-American spinner called Alfie Davidson was resident. Alfie was the DJ, by the way, who was alongside David when it first came to playing Manu Dibango's Sol Mucosa. Walter was more focused than Alfie Davidson on playing private house parties, where he would set up his home stereo system and sometimes make a little money. Rich Flores told me, I should mention, he moved into an apartment with Walter in the autumn of 1972. Walter was this mama's kid. He was green. He knew nobody in the industry and he had no connections. That began to change when Walter started to work at Melody Song Shops, informally known as Melody Records, in the spring of 1973. So Walter was born in 1954, so he is 19 years old, basically. And toward the end of the year, he started to DJ at the Outside Inn, a gay venue situated in Jackson Heights, Queens, after Rich Flores took it upon himself to call around the clubs that were listed in Michael's Thing, which was a gay magazine. When MFSB released Love is the Message, a song and title that we are all familiar with here, right? I'm hoping so. When MFSB released Love is the Message around the same time, Walter took to extending its instrumental section, after which he began to blend it with spoken extracts from The Wizard of Oz. Yet it was his ability to extend the break that became his trademark skill. Mark Zimmer, who was another person who I interviewed for this piece, thanks Mark, Mark went on to listen to Walter after meeting him in Melody Records towards the beginning of 1974, so Walter's almost 20 at that point. So Mark told me, I was amazed at the way he would mix. He was working with these short little records, which were just 2 or 3 minutes long, with maybe a 2-measure introduction, and he had them mixing down pat. He would extend the break until he got exhausted or until people on the dance floor became fatigued. It was just magnificent to see him do it. So Mark remembers Walter being amazing. Walter went on to DJ at Galaxy 21, an after-hours venue on 23rd Street around late 1974, or possibly early 1975. And it was there that he began to play records such as Rare Earth's Happy Song, which was drawn from the 1975 album Back to Earth, Jermaine Jackson's Eruku, which was released by Motown on the Mahogany soundtrack in 1975, and also the Coolie High soundtrack number Two Pigs and a Hog, which was also released in 1975, and all of which contained prominent breaks. So Kenny Carpenter, who worked alongside Walter at Galaxy 21 as the light man there, and the two of them briefly dated, and I interviewed Kenny for Love Saves the Day. Kenny remembers, Walter was so innovative. He would buy 2 copies of a record like Happy Song, and he would loop the 30-second conga section. Francois Kevorkian who just arrived from France, traveled to New York in 1975 to work as a drummer and sort of wanted to work in jazz or in fusion, and, you know, found work at Galaxy 21 playing as a drummer alongside Walter. He was hired by the owner, George Foreman, somewhat against Walter's will, apparently. So Francois recalls, listeners, and I quote, would never hear the actual song when Walter worked 2 copies of Happy Song. Francois adds, you just heard the drums. It seemed like he kept them going forever, although I imagine it was actually about 10 minutes. It was in the late night setting of Galaxy 21 that Walter was able to fully develop his craft. Tony Smith, who was the DJ at Barefoot Boy, a real sweet guy and an old-timer who's been around forever, who met Walter in mid-1975, told me in an interview conducted after the publication of Love Saves the Day. This was fresh for this piece of research, this essay. Tony Smith told me, you could get away with things at an after-hours venue that you couldn't get away with at a regular club night. After 5 hours of dancing in another venue, people would have heard most of the things that they wanted to hear, and they would be ready for something new. You could go to Galaxy 21 at 7 a.m. Most other discotheques closed at 4 a.m. and Galaxy 21 opened at 4 a.m. So Tony's saying, you could go to Galaxy 21 at 7 a.m. and the club would still be packed. Looping breaks in order to generate tension before switching to a euphoria-inducing vocal crescendo, Walter acquired a reputation for being a highly skilled original. As Danny Krivit told me, Danny started DJing at the Ninth Circle in... not sure, actually. Here I've written 1971, but I think actually I looked into this and I think it may be a few years later. I'm not sure. As Danny told me, Walter was making a lot of flawless mixes. He would go back and forth very quickly, which made it sound like a live edit. It was very impressive. Disco historian Peter Shapiro notes that people started to refer to Walter's style as jungle music.